Welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak. Tim, we've got an important conversation today.
Yeah, we do. Usually I enjoy the banter you and I enjoy
the first couple of minutes, really.
Just kind of laughing about something funny, but this really is no laughing matter today. I think we need to get to it and get pretty serious.
Yeah, the issue is anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
And it's an issue that we're seeing all over the place, whether you point to some of the school shootings in 2018 or just any number of obstacles that kids today are facing. What it's leading to is really what many people are calling an epidemic.
Yeah. In fact, I would say every single school we go to, this topic comes up.
Yeah.
And we'll do a couple hundred events this year. Every school, at some point in the conversation with the educator, the administrator, the coach, the athletic director, they'll talk about the stress, anxiety, and depression that students are facing today and how to beat it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody wants to know because honestly, the statistics and the stories are staggering.
Yeah.
Like for instance, I'm reading the APA says that 44% of university students say that they're so overwhelmed that it's difficult to function. Almost half would say, I don't even know if I can do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would be the average student. Forget the student athletes that's practicing and playing games 40 hours a week on top of the full load of classes. So that same American Psychological Association reported that many students today have higher levels of stress than adults do. And I'm just thinking, that's not a world that ought to be happening.
No.
You know, we should graduate into higher levels of stress because our coping skills are better. But this is happening at a young age.
Yeah, and it feels like as students continue to face more and more obstacles, we continue as adults to be almost more less ready to kind of handle them and help them navigate these difficult conversations. And we've mentioned, we hear from adults all the time, you know, my student's facing this. This is the obstacle we're facing. This is a huge issue for us. But we hear from students too.
Yeah, it's sad. When I am doing events, and I think you've done this too, when you do events for Growing Leaders, we'll begin to talk about a statement that has been made by a couple of MDs, a couple of doctors, that the average American teen today experiences the same level of anxiety as a psychiatric patient did back in the 1950s. So the parallels are just screwy. They're just wrong. We need to fix this somehow.
Yeah. And as we continue to face this obstacle, as it grows bigger and bigger, I think the effect is going to be tangible for the students we face.
Yeah. So listeners, I'm not sure if you're seeing this where you're probably thinking, do I see this too? Maybe you don't. But let me just give you some statements. The high school and college students that we'll meet are reporting realities like these. And I'm just going to give you statements from students. The first one, I feel like we have to be perfect for colleges, and we have a big workload. Most of the time, we just talk about how stressed we are in the residence halls. Another statement, when we feel this stressed out, that's when so many of us start doing stupid things. It's a coping strategy we don't even think about. And then finally, another student, I feel tons of fatigue, and I'm tired most of the time. I sometimes skip meals because I'm so stressed out.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, it makes me think of a conversation I had in a focus group. I think it was 2 years ago, actually. So this is an issue that's been going on for a while. But I had an eighth grade student who told me, sometimes I walk through the living room and my parents are watching nightly news.
Yeah.
And the stuff I see on there, the things I'm reminded of, the obstacles we're facing are just so difficult for me to do. He said, I'll just go play video games or something to
as an escape.
Yeah, to get away. Yeah. It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And for me, if I think back to that time, I don't know that I knew what a coping mechanism was or even how to have one at that age.
Yeah.
But because of the obstacles they're facing, it continues to get worse and worse.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
So let's jump in. Andrew, I'd like you to kind of lead the way on this, but we have some ideas that are doable, simple.
Yeah.
Certainly, we're not saying that a student that's suffering from clinical depression or heavy anxiety doesn't need medication. There is a place for that for sure, but there's so much high levels of anxiety. Maybe some simple steps might even be helpful to begin with.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's worth us thinking about when students are facing so many obstacles like anxiety and depression, is it possible that there's something about the way that we're leading them that could change in order to help with this issue? And I know when you and I talk about this, we say this all the time, there are absolutely some things we can do.
Yeah.
So what we're hoping is these are practical ideas that can get us started, at least in thinking about how do we help them navigate this issue and not do everything for them, but at least create some mental shifts that help us get closer to a healthy sort of relationship with the world around us.
Andrew, I'm thinking about the session you just led us in at lunchtime today, where you talked about habits in our life
that we tend to
we'll make that statement about how we do what we love, and we lean into the kind of structures and habits that make us who we are.
Yeah, the basic idea is, you know, each of us is doing things, and there are things that we call habits, right?
Yeah.
The practices that we do every single day. And the more we do those habits, the more it teaches us at a subconscious level to love or desire things that, you know, whatever we're practicing that habit for, it sort of orients us in a certain direction. And to apply it here, I think there are lots of young people who are doing daily habits that are orienting them towards anxiety and depression. Yeah. I think that's the issue that we can solve here. So, Tim, we've got four ideas that I think are going to be really helpful. Start us off with number one.
Okay. This first one may sound obvious, but I want you to just to ponder this. The first practice is don't think binge, think balance.
Hmm.
Now, the reason I think this is a big idea, Andrew, is because we are in a binge culture.
Yeah, we really are.
It's a time of extreme sports. It's a time of you can binge watch Netflix or whatever you want to on demand on your television set or your video game console. So we're just in a day where you just rinse and repeat whatever you like. And I think it's caused some kids to just spiral the wrong direction. I'm even talking to athletic coaches at the D1 level that will say, I'm now recruiting two sport athletes, not one sport, just to give them a little more balance to their life. They're not just thinking about soccer, it's soccer and tennis or soccer and something else.
Yeah,
because they know they're more emotionally healthy.
To have a student who can think about multiple things at once and not just kind of obsess over one thing. You mentioned binging. It's funny because I think that term binging would have been a negative term 10, 15 years ago, and now it's become a cultural norm, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I mentioned that kid who says, hey, I go play video games just to get away from it. That same APA report said that 40% of kids today say they play video games or go online to relax.
Yes.
In other words, we've got binging habits, right? Yeah. We mentioned habits. We've got binging habits as part of our normal routine to try and help us cope with the realities around us.
Yeah. So here's what I mean by thinking balance instead of binge. As I think about beginning to see these very patterns in my kids' behavior, who are now grown adults, I think a couple of things that my wife and I did that were just very, very helpful, and I think they're applicable to teachers, coaches, and parents, are we would say, if I see a pattern of behavior in my young person that's in front of me in their lifestyle, I want to balance it with something that would be reciprocal or opposite. So, for instance, here's a good example. For every 2 hours that my son, Jonathan, spent in front of a video screen, I'd make sure he had 2 hours face-to-face with real people, having interactions, reading body language, just learning how to read people, because the screen wasn't teaching that very well.
Yeah.
So screens, there's a place for screens, but I wanted to make sure he wasn't just good on the screen, but horrible with real people. And by the way, he's going to be marrying a real person, not a screen, later this year. So that's huge. Here's another one. If they spent time in self-absorbed activities, they knew they needed to spend equal time in service projects where we're serving other people. We're actually mindful of other people. Time with peers, I thought, was important then to balance with time with adults.
Yeah.
We live in a culture where it's so easy to, if you're a junior in high school, to be with a whole bunch of other juniors in high school on Snapchat. Well, now, what if you talk to a 40-year-old and a 60-year-old and a 32-year-old? And I just think there's something healthy about balance that makes us whole people and, can I say, less stressed.
Yeah, you know what I really love about that is in this mindset, with this idea, we're not saying no, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I think so many times when we start conversations with kids about technology or video games or whatever it is, they think automatically we're going to call everything evil and, you know, throw it out the window. It reminds me, I was talking about social media and technology with a group of students, and I had some seventh graders who said, we almost weren't going to come because we didn't want to hear you just say everything was terrible and we should throw it away.
It
was like, why would I say that? It's a part of our world.
Yeah.
The reality is we need to find balance. And I think that's such a great example. I love especially that we have so many things in our world that are self-absorbed, right? We saw we see narcissism creeping up a little bit every year. But what if we balance that with some sort of thing where we're serving others, or at least others-oriented? Yeah. I love things like that. I think that's really helpful.
No doubt about it. Well, and here, let me just do one more little nugget here before we move on to another idea. I recently did an event where a dad stood up in a parent event and talked about a conversation he recently had with a professor at Virginia Tech, a great school that we have worked with. And he just mentioned this Virginia Tech professor was interacting with employers around Blacksburg, and the employers were saying, I'd rather have a graduate with a 2.0 GPA that had some skills at work than a 4.0 GPA without the skills.
Yeah.
Now, you and I think that makes sense, but I think the average parent thinks, no, SAT, ACT, you know, GPA.
It's all dependent on that.
We can binge on a good thing and even come up with a bad product at the end. So I'd rather have balance. I just think it makes emotionally whole students and adults, and I want to encourage the listeners, moderation is actually a very, very good word.
Yeah, love it, love it. Okay, take us to number two.
All right, the second idea, again, very simple, but boy, profound if we'll practice it. Don't think push, think pull. Now, here's what I mean by this. When a student lacks ambition and wilts under pressure, and by the way, we hear teachers and coaches saying they're just wilting under pressure. The first sign of real pressure, they just crumble. And I'm not saying every kid does that, but we hear teachers and coaches saying that's happening way too often. I wonder if reducing the outside pressure we apply might be helpful. And I think the difference between push and pull is this. If I'm pushing something on you, let me just say you're my student, I am, you're feeling imposed upon.
Yeah.
You're feeling like, dadgummit, I got to do another thing on my already busy to-do list today of homework and this and that and the other. But if I'm pulling you, I'm encouraging you to come forward with me to a good outcome, you think, wow, I probably need to behave differently. But pulling rather than pushing is a huge mental shift. And by the way, it may just be semantics, but it's a good semantic change. I'm thinking differently, or at least I'm producing different kinds of paradigms in the student that I'm talking with. We've talked before about the great research behind when you have to give feedback to a student.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, you were completely wrong in what you just did, and now let me tell you what to do, that's pushing.
Yeah.
But if you say, I'm giving you this feedback because I know you can do it. I so believe in your potential. I've seen you do this.
Yeah.
That just feels differently, even though it's leading to the very same outcome.
It's like the difference between dictating something and leading someone,
right? Yeah, that's
right?
So true.
We're not just telling them a list of rules. We're actually calling greatness out of them. It reminds me of a habitude you've been working on called clean windows.
Yeah, right? That's right. Talk about that.
I'm not going to do it as good as you do, of course, Tim, but it's when you say when people approach leadership things, right, it's very easy to think, I want the windows clean, the easiest thing to do is just say, here's how I want you to clean the windows, and give instructions, right?
Yep.
Inputs, I think, is what you say.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But great leaders actually communicate outcomes. Yep. In other words, I want the windows cleaned, right? I'm painting a picture of a goal and actually giving them some ownership and some leadership. I'm calling them to greatness and saying, I need the windows cleaned. How you do it, how you accomplish that is up to you.
Use your own innovation inside.
Yeah, I love
it.
Now
it's coming from within. And that's the point. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's the point where I think we're trying to make here. I am less stressed when the drive comes from within rather than from without.
Yeah.
Somebody pushing something on me, even if it's a good thing. Parents and coaches and teachers, listen to me. What you're wanting them to do is probably very good. You have their best interests in mind. But you imposing something or pushing something just causes them to become a lesser version of themselves, I believe anyway.
Yeah, love it, love it. Okay, so let's move on to number three. I think this one's going to be great.
Yeah. Number three is another shift that we need to make, but here it is. Don't think pressure, think perspective. So instead of viewing all their tasks as barriers in the way, foes to conquer or stressors to be endured, why not see them as opportunities to experience? And again, this may, Andrew, just seem like a semantical difference, but it's a gigantic one because I'm now seeing things differently. So we're saying again, I see this as something you can pull off. I'll give you a good example. I have always remembered loving the work that I do, but it became fundamentally different when I started growing leaders. Now it was completely my, I came up with my to-do list.
Yeah.
Nobody gave it to, not John Maxwell, nothing. Nobody, you know, suddenly I was working as hard as ever, but it felt like play.
Yeah.
I mean that. It literally felt like play because it was something I wanted to do. But my mindset changed as my circumstances changed.
Yeah.
So it was just big.
We talk a lot about communicating the why, and it seems like there's a connection here. You know, we when we work with students, one of the things that they ask is, why do I have to know this? And I think far too few of us communicate why. But I think when we communicate why, that's exactly what we do, is we actually communicate opportunity, right?
No doubt.
If I'm telling you why I'm leading you in this way and why I'm calling this greatness out of you, in other words, this is the end result of what you're going to experience, all of a sudden, it's not a rule that I gave to you. It's an opportunity that you have to live up to the thing that I'm handing to you.
Absolutely.
And it transfers that ownership, and all of a sudden, it's a transformation.
Yeah. Well, and I think that begins to resolve the student from saying, this is too hard for me. I can't do this. I'm too young. I don't know what I'm doing. You remember, we've often said that what teachers constantly hear from students today is, this is too hard.
Yep.
You know, and they're telling. But I actually believe students actually do harder things than any teacher asks them to do when they're on their own.
Yes.
Whatever it is, whatever project they've come up with, because it's a perspective change, and it's coming from within.
Yeah. I was actually at a middle school recently, and I remember one of the one of the computer teachers said, you know, it's one of these kids who just doesn't want to do math problems at all of a sudden pulls out his computer. And I realized, he said, I'm 30 something years old. This kid is doing advanced computer programming far, like light years beyond where I am. And one of the things that, that he was saying is basically like, we're not expecting enough of these kids, and they're so much more capable than we give them credit for. I think we've got the potential to have the greatest generation ever if we can do this thing, shift the perspective, or shift to a perspective and help them see these obstacles as opportunities.
Good.
All Excellent. Right. So let's move on to number four.
Okay. The final thought here before I want to share a quick story before you kind of lead us to a takeaway here,
okay,
Andrew. My last shift is one that may sound, again, like old school, but I actually think it's new school today. Don't think today, think tomorrow. Now, I'm certainly a believer in seize the day and enjoy today and smell the roses. That's not what I'm getting at. I'm getting at the idea that we are now a culture that's so caught up in and actually so consumed in what's happening right in front of me. I'm not seeing the long term. And seeing the long term always helps me, I think. Yeah. I make better decisions if I see the long term. Certainly that's true with credit card debt.
Yeah.
Certainly that's true with making a purchase. You know, all kinds of things. So I remember distinctly hearing Susie Welch, Jack Welch's wife, former CEO of General Electric.
Yeah.
Susie Welch did a great book, and she called it the 10-10-10 questions. These are profound. They're simple but profound. Here they are. Her 10-10-10 questions were, will this matter 10 days from now? How about 10 months from now?
Mm.
And then how about 10 years from now?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I might do several things any given day differently when I start asking those questions.
Yeah.
I'll never forget hearing a dad one time saying he was coaching the hockey team at his son's high school, and his son was a really good hockey player. In fact, he was a puck hog. You know, he just hogged the puck most of the time, and he scored. But he said, son, now that I'm the coach, I really can't have you doing that. You know, you got to share. You got to pass. You know, be an assist. So his son started passing the puck, and the team started losing. I mean, it was pretty bad. He told me he was in a quandary because he wanted his team to win. He's the coach, you know, but he had just given his son instructions to pass. And so finally, after like the fourth game, and they were 0-4 now, he pulled his son aside and said, son, I know I told you to, you know, pass it off, but you need to take it in and score. You need to. And he just went on a rant, a rave about how he needed to just go ahead and hog the puck and take it in for the score. And he said, I'll never forget my son looking at me, pausing and saying, Dad, 10 years from now, will this even matter? So a teenager instructed a 48-year-old in the process. But I think, you know, this is how we need to be thinking. And I believe this is how we need to be teaching our students to think. making the C on the test has thrown some students into a spiral downward. Mm-hmm. You know what? I made a few C's. Yeah. Actually, I'm not going to tell you how many C's I made, and I'm doing okay.
You're
now.
Doing okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've just got to give perspective and remind them you're going to make it. This is just fine.
Yeah. We need more students who have long-term thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. So real quick, I know we need to wrap up here pretty soon, but I've told this story at events. I don't know if I've told it on a podcast before. My son Jonathan is now in his mid-20s. He's getting married. But I'll never forget, about 12 years ago, we did a daddy-son trip, and it was really profound because I let him choose wherever he wanted to go, and he happened to choose Minneapolis, Minnesota.
That's where all kids want to go.
That's absolutely. Camp Snoopy and the Mall of America, and of course, there were some other things up there he wanted to see. Yeah. So we went up there, and the first three of our 4 days together, we just had fun. I mean, we had pillow fights in the hotel and rode on the roller coaster at the Mall of America and just did a whole bunch of fun stuff. But on the final day, we took our car rental up to one of the 10,000 lakes up there near Minneapolis, and I parked the car in a parking lot, and I said, Jonathan, I'm going to do something a little strange now. And he said, tell me something I don't know. And I said, shut up. Okay, so I said, I want to trade places with you. I want to switch seats, and I want to sit in the passenger seat, and I want you to sit in this car we have rented, and I want you to sit behind the wheel, and I want you to drive this car. Well, he was paralyzed. He was with fear, you know, oh my God, because he's 13 years old. He said, Dad, that's illegal. That's illegal. That's illegal. That's illegal. I said, Jonathan, we're not going to go out in the roads. We're just going to stay here in the parking lot. Next thing he said was, Dad, Mom will not like this. She will not like this. And I said, Jonathan, Mom doesn't need to know. So anyway, after 10 minutes of conversation, I finally convinced my son, this young teen, to get behind the wheel before he has a license. And he starts driving the car. And before I know it, he is loving driving this car. He is speeding through the parking lot, loving every minute of it. After several minutes of driving, I finally got him to stop. But here's the conversation we had on the heels of that experience he just had. I said, Jonathan, I know this sounds really cheesy, but just go with me on this one, okay? By the way, we traded seats back, and I now was behind the wheel. I said, Jonathan, tell me how you felt when you first got behind the wheel of this car, and I had to explain the accelerator and the brake and the gear shift and the steering wheel. Well, he paused, but he didn't have to think very long. He said, Dad, I was scared to death. I mean, I was panicked. I didn't think I could do it. I said, would you just show me? And he said, I guess I showed you I could do it. I said, that's exactly right. And then I said, Jonathan, that feeling you just had is the exact feeling you're going to have when you become a man. When you're going to reach certain ages in your development where you feel like, I'm 18, I'm 21, I'm 24, I'm done with college. And I said, you're going to feel panicked. Most of us did. Come on, let's get on. If we had our moments, you know, when we got married and we thought, holy smokes, I don't know what I'm doing here. But I began to explain that development usually starts with, I've got to do something I don't feel I'm ready or qualified to do.
Yeah.
But I show when I begin to step out and do it, it's in me to do it. Even though I was stressed and anxious, I could do it. Mm. And then we began to talk about the changes that would be happening in his mind and emotions and his view of girls and his view of his parents and the way his body would be changing. It led to an incredible conversation, but the point was that little experiment led to a great conversation where what was once a stressor became an opportunity.
Wow.
And he looked forward to it. So I share that only because I feel like we as adults in their life, whatever your job is listening today, we need to be the people that walk into their life and have these conversations that turn what might be stressful and anxious and even depressing into something that isn't quite that bad. And we give them perspective that's long-term.
I love that. I love that. What an incredible story. I think the key that you outlined there was this is about conversations and relationships.
Yeah, it really
and
is.
I think when we lean into that, we can help them through what is a really, really serious issue that we're dealing with today with anxiety and depression. So thanks, Tim, for sharing that. I hope these four ideas are helpful for you. If you're thinking about wanting to have a better relationship with the students you lead or maybe the kids that you lead, if you're thinking about starting conversations, how do we even begin some of these conversations? We actually have a tool that we've created that Tim created called Habitudes, and they're images that form leadership habits and attitudes, and they're really conversation starters. And I know what's really interesting is you started them originally having conversations. conversations with your kids around the dinner table.
Absolutely.
So no matter what context you're in, they could actually become a really great tool for you to lead those conversations and to begin to help your students have that perspective. You know, one of our habitudes is drivers and passengers,
yeah,
just like you
right.
talked about.
Yeah.
It's all about ownership. So anyways, if that's something you're interested in, go check out growingleaders.com/habitudes. And you can get a free sample. You can look at it for free and check it out. We'd love for you to use that as a tool to create relationships and connect with the students that you lead. As always, we want to invite you to give us feedback. So if you have comments or questions, you get an idea for the podcast, send us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. We'd love to read those and to check those out. Thanks so much, Tim, for leading us in this conversation. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.